I was a longtime Delta Elite. You know, I have lifetime status with them. I rarely fly them because the value just isn't there. I'm much better off trying to get some better benefits from another, as good an airline as they may run. And don't get me wrong, I don't think that they're a bad airline. I don't think the product is bad, you know, when you fly them. But the truth is that they've not been pushing a value proposition. They've been pushing a premium proposition to say, hey, you will get a better product if you fly with us for your money, but you're not going to get better treatment. You're not going to get major perks. And, you know, I just think that at some point their business model is going to have to shift somewhere because they can't just keep doing this.
Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This week, we bring back a continuing tradition. This should post on December 23rd. It is Festivus, my friends. With us, as always, is Tom Kim, but we have a very special guest, a repeat guest, Miss Dia Adams. Thank you so much for joining us, Dia, for this Festivus celebration.
I could not think of a better episode to guest on because I have lots of grievances.
Happy Festivus, everyone. Happy Festivus.
Oh, happy Festivus indeed. Does anybody have the metal pole? I'm looking for the metal pole here.
Oh.
Let's see.
No.
Oh, I think I might have it.
Candlestick.
There we go. I got a pen.
So just as a recap for our listeners who may not have heard from us in the past, since this is only the second Festivus episode for Travel Stories. So Festivus is a non-commercial holiday celebration as depicted on Seinfeld. It occurs on 23 December. If you want to go back and watch that episode, it is season 9, episode 10, The Strike. And my gosh, every time I watch it, it just makes me want New York bagels because Kramer is striking from the bagel shop.
That's right. Now the episode's coming back to me.
What it includes, and this is a tradition that George Costanza's father had or family had, it includes an unadorned aluminum pole, practices such as the airing of grievances, which we all love. And clearly that's what you're here for, Dia.
I'm all about the grievances.
Feats of strength, because we're all about the feats of strength in the Mile and Points game. And Festivus miracles. And my friends, I am here to tell you there were definitely some Festivus miracles this year. So with that, welcome to our Festivus celebration. We'll start off with airing of grievances. Dia, as our wonderful, wonderful guest, we'll give you the floor. What is your grievance? The way we'll lay this out, I should say, is everyone gets two grievances, one toward an airline or loyalty program and one toward a bank, because we like to spread the love for grievances.
Well, my grievance, I have two, as you mentioned. I even have a bonus grievance if we want to go there. My main grievance toward loyalty programs, and I couldn't isolate one because they're all terrible at it, has to do with hotel programs. And if you have ever tried to find a hotel room for more than two people outside of the United States, it is a nightmare to use points. Once your third person gets out of a crib, once they require a real bed, and God forbid you have a fourth person or, oh my gosh, even a fifth person, you are looking at two or possibly three hotel rooms if you want to try to use points in Europe. So my grievance is partly toward the programs, and my grievance is also partly towards us, because I feel like we in the miles and points community don't do a good enough job with that disclaimer when we're talking about the joys of hotel points and the joys of hotel programs. And I cannot tell you how many parents I have met at happy hours, at things like Chicago seminars, that are sitting on a million Hilton points, Marriott points, a couple hundred thousand Hyatt points, and they're impossible to spend. And I've been in situations where I've been in presidential suites that have coded for two people. And you run the risk of literally being marched out of the hotel, which I know numerous people who have tried it. And 50-50, sometimes it works, but it would certainly be a bummer on your vacation when it doesn't. And I do know of someone who has been marched out of a hotel for trying to get her kids into a room that wasn't coded for as many people as she had listed for the room. So that is my loyalty program grievance. Also, it is incumbent upon us to make sure that people know about it, because I also don't feel like we do a good enough job when we're talking about the joys of hotel cards.
And Dia, would you say that that is, because you said that that was a fault, obviously in the community, totally agree. We probably don't talk about that enough because it's all about selling the sizzle, you know, and bragging about the sizzle, so to speak. But my understanding is like in France, for example, it's a legitimate zoning thing or coding or whatever the policy or the regulation is that France is saying, is your feeling that the hotels could just give more square footage and then make them more family friendly? Like they do have family rooms in Europe?
No, I don't. I think that the loyalty programs could do things to help mitigate. For instance, loyalty programs could do 50% off a second room on points, the same way they do 50% off a second room if you're paying cash. I think that there are ways that the loyalty programs could help work around it, because honestly, they're coming up against the law. So no, I don't think that the hotels should break the laws. But this is where the education piece comes in. Until you've stayed in numerous hotel rooms in Europe, you don't understand the size of hotel rooms in Europe. And that you could literally be in a 10 by 10 room that is smaller than your bathroom. And it could be considered a legitimate points room, especially a points room in some of these smaller boutique hotels, because they give away the base level room. It could be considered a legitimate room on points. So I think that there are things the loyalty programs could do to help mitigate it. But really, I guess kind of the grievance is upon us as a community, because I just don't think people talk about it enough.
Yeah, and you know, I think it's not just Europe. I mean, it could be other parts of the world too. You know, I think there are other parts of countries that are not in Europe that may do the same kind of enforcement, because yeah, there are fire codes or occupancy codes and other things in different countries that aren't. And you know, you're right. I think the square footage, generally speaking, we're probably spoiled a little bit in the U.S. where, you know, it's the norm to have two queen beds and have up to four adults in a room, and that seems to be pretty normal practice almost everywhere in North America. And then suddenly you go to another country in Europe and they're like, oh, wait, no. This isn't how we operate.
Unless you're New York. I think New York probably has smaller rooms than most of Europe.
But even in New York, you can find family rooms on points. You know what I mean? It may not be a base level room, but you can find rooms to sleep four people on points. And in Europe, unless you're using, I mean, and obviously I've kind of made my life's work figuring out what kind of points I can use. But unless you're using very specific programs like Accor, it's pretty much, if you're using the traditional programs, you could be sitting on a million points and just not be able to spend them outside of the United States.
That's just crazy. Okay, that's a pretty strong airing of grievances to start out with. How are you going to follow that one up with a bank grievance?
You guys might have noticed I put in the notes, Saks Fifth Avenue doesn't even sell popcorn anymore, which may have seemed like a strange way to start off my grievance, but honestly, that's my grievance. And what I mean by that is that in March of this year, I finally had extricated myself after probably 20 years. I'd extricated myself from my last American Express Platinum card. Didn't have a business card, didn't have a personal card. I'd finally gotten out. 4 months later, between the Centurion Club in D.C. and a $100,000 offer to upgrade one of my cards, they got me back in. So poor Greg, my husband, for like 6 years in a row, got popcorn for Christmas because that was all I could find, because it get to be the middle of December and you need to spend that stupid credit. And that was all I could find on their website to buy. And so this year, the day after Thanksgiving, because it's, you know, the 15X on Rakuten and all that, I'll go to spend your, Rakuten, thank you, to go spend your Saks credit. They don't even sell food anymore. So what I ended up doing was I ended up sending my son on Black Friday. They were going to the mall anyway. So I'm like, listen, this is your gift to me. Take this card and spend my money, because I can't figure out how to spend it. So he came back and he came back with a bag. I should have brought it. It's about this big with a travel size perfume in it that I haven't opened. I told him I wouldn't, but he was like, there's nothing in that store for $50. And I'm like, I know, but at least on the website, there used to be popcorn. And so my grievance is that the coupon book is like every single time I go to use the coupon book, it just gets more and more difficult to use.
By design, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Just think of Dell. Dell took away the Bose products or Bose headphones this year.
Yeah.
And there's just less and less. I'm curious, though, do they not sell Bombas socks anymore? Because that used to be a nice, easy gift, too.
You know, I didn't check Bombas. That would have been a good call. The things that I used to get the popcorn. I used to be able to get tea. There used to be this really good baby linen spray that was around 15, 20 bucks a bottle that was like made your room smell like a fresh nursery, which was kind of nice. I know some people get like sunscreen, but by the time I looked at sunscreen, it was like 3 ounces of sunscreen. I'm like, I can't. I mean, you know, between that and I go to Europe and buy sunscreen. It's cheaper than buying it at Saks Fifth Avenue. But next year, I will look for Bombas socks. That's a good tip.
I feel like Robert might have gotten a spatula, or a wooden spatula or something.
A single spatula. That sounds about
That sounds like peak Saks.
One fork.
Yes.
A fork.
Yes. One napkin, maybe? I don't know.
One napkin.
Oh, now you're starting to get into wedding gifts. I mean, I'm sure they have plenty of single napkins for $50. I'm certain of it. You get a whole table setting for $1,000. That sounds so appropriate for Saks.
What a deal.
Yeah, but they used to have like puzzles. I used to be able to get like a couple. I remember one year I got like 4 things. I got 2 puzzles and a tea and a popcorn. And I was like, okay, well, that was 50 bucks well spent. But now, yeah, forget it.
Now buying and using that credit is the puzzle.
Yes. That is absolutely true.
Especially without any free shipping. So that's like even more add insult to injury, if you ask me.
Okay, so you said that you had a bonus grievance.
I do.
Having seen the note on this, I would be remiss if we didn't make sure that that made it in this episode.
Yes. I know this may be a bit of a hot take to some of the purists in the community. And I think actually we talked about this on my first episode. My grievance is against Google. And what has happened in the past year, and specifically even in the past 2 months, to content creators all across the board, from individual travel bloggers to huge sites like Fortune and Forbes, Fortune where I work right now, have been absolutely decimated by Google. And what Google has done in the case of some of these larger sites is they have essentially delisted entire portions of the site. This happened about a month ago. And what that means is that literally if you type, for instance, Forbes Advisor American Express Platinum Card, their review won't show because it literally does not exist, according to Google. Mm. Because entire portions of their site just got decimated. The reason that, and this is the part where it gets very, very shady in my opinion. The reason that they've done this is something they're calling site reputation abuse. And essentially what they're arguing is that sites are using too many freelancers. But the sites that they're promoting an exception to the sites they've delisted are Reddit and Quora. And it's like, who would you rather get advice from? Would you rather get advice from an experienced freelancer who has been writing about credit cards for a decade, probably has an entity of their own, speaks at conferences, is well known, is well regarded, or Joe Schmo 69, who has a strong opinion on return protection? So it's to the entire communities, it does the entire community a disservice because thousands and thousands of creators from, like I said, from independent sites. I know I have a friend I talked to just yesterday that had an independent site that at one point, and it was travel, it wasn't even miles and points, travel, where she was making an actual income, quit your job income off the site, and now zero in the space of a year. And it's just because Google has deprioritized individual creators in favor of ads and what they're calling user-generated content, which essentially is Reddit and Quora.
I mean, I think it sounds like Google doing a lot of abuse to their reputation. I mean, if the kinds of things that they're delisting are the authoritative sources, and then what's left over are kind of the Wild West, you know, resources. I find that Reddit and Quora probably are both two sites with a very high percentage of either noise or incorrect information, for that matter.
Or outright spam, or outright AI and spam, and people just trying to direct you to another site. One thing, if people care about this, if there's something that people, if they care about it, the one thing that they can do is just choose another default web browser. I use DuckDuckGo.
That's a good point.
Other people use Bing. And the only thing that is going to change Google's stance in any way, shape, or form, and this doesn't even just affect travel. This affects if you care about gas grills and you want to find out who the guy is that is obsessed with gas grills out there, because you know there is one, even he is getting trouble getting his stuff to show up on Google. It's across pretty much any industry that gives advice in any way, shape, or form. If they are attaching affiliate links to that advice, Google has completely discredited and delisted their information.
But it's even worse than that, because now they're also putting AI-generated content that may be learning from some of those websites, but we don't know where from, right? I can't remember. Don't quote me on this, but I thought Google might have, either ChatGPT or Google were trying to talk to Reddit about being able to have their AI learn from Reddit, which that's dangerous in and of itself. But when you go to Google now, you get Gemini responses in the top of your screen. So you've got to scroll down almost to the end of the first page before you start getting to an actual website that's not either AI generated or sponsored.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So it's not even the delisting. It's the fact that the Google algorithm itself is so hamstrung compared to what it used to be.
And the thing that the people, and it's so short-sighted, because as we lose human creators, AI is going to start learning from AI. And then you just have an internet that just collapses under its own weight and just this endless rambling pile of garbage that is literally your AI is learning from other AI. And so there's no human content left. And that we're rapidly getting to that point because human creators are being shut out left and right. I mean, my LinkedIn right now looks like a nuked battlefield. It's awful because so many people across so many different parts of this industry are being affected by it. So yeah, if there's one miracle you want to create, change your default browser.
Yeah, it definitely feels like a knee-jerk reaction from like a monopolist that is starting to feel a little bit of pressure from new technology, which is, in a sense, you know, this is kind of a tipping point, it feels like, for Google, because they're having to do these kind of knee-jerk things because suddenly some of their power, I think, is being challenged. And it definitely feels like they're reacting, but maybe not in the best way.
I had a completely different take.
Oh, did you? Okay.
So I think there's two pieces, right? I think the delisting is just Google being a horrible citizen of the internet.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the use of their AI is because somebody thought it was such a cool idea and that they could get more, I don't know if they could get more ad revenue by utilizing the AI or if they just thought maybe that would give their customers a faster answer.
They're basically viewing advice sites as a middleman as opposed to having value because they actually give advice. So they feel like they're stripping out the middleman, not realizing that what they're replacing the middleman with is a million times worse.
Yep.
And it's interesting. Like, I remember the porting area folks, I won't name names, had said at one point that ad revenue had gone down substantially. And you could almost see the story playing out over the course of, what, 5-6 years, where first ad revenue is going down on the websites. So now suddenly Google has this new AI thing. Now they don't need the websites that they were getting all their ads on. They can just try to direct everybody to the browser and maybe that browser. I just don't see how they get the revenue. The only time I actually, maybe I'm part of the problem, because when I see a website that I don't necessarily always like, but I realize that they've got the answer, I'm not going to name names. I will almost vindictively choose the sponsored post versus the non-sponsored post. I don't know. It just feels like, hey, if you're going to be really good at SEO and like blitz me with 5-10 links, then yeah, you're going to pay for it. But maybe that's not the right way to go about it.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I would say is, you know, it doesn't feel like that Google is necessarily in the driver's seat when it comes to all these different AI enhanced searching that's out there. And that's why I feel like they're panicking, if you ask me. You know, that's been my take on it, is you have a monopolist that has been riding high for a long time. And, you know, you see this a lot, right? Whenever you see these industries where something big comes in, something transformative, And the incumbent is usually doing a lot of knee-jerk movements because they don't know what to do. They're not used to being challenged.
That I fundamentally agree with. And they also have set systems in place that they don't know how to fix.
Yeah.
They don't even know how to revert at this point. They've admitted that full out.
Unintended consequences.
Lots of them. Lots of them.
Which might be a good segue to my grievance.
Please get us out of Google land.
Well, you know, speaking of, you know, large corporations that are used to being the winner and have, let's just say, a fair dose of arrogance. My grievance is with the loyalty program, and that's the Delta SkyMiles program, which is probably a repeat offender. I think they probably make the Festivus grievance list more than once over the decades. This year, probably the most egregious thing that I think I've heard of a loyalty program do is actually brag at Investor Day that they sell 88% of their first class seats. To me, that means that they are providing such little value to their elite members in the way of first class upgrades that why do they even bother with an elite program at this point?
Well, I mean, they have to acknowledge their customers one way. Your point is incredibly valid. Wasn't it Alaska's CEO that was trying to highlight all the other benefits of status other than the actual upgrades?
It's an industry-wide problem, mind you. I mean, I'm singling out Delta because, you know, they're kind of the thought leader, right? And they're clearly doing the best job of monetizing their premium classes.
But it's interesting for a number of reasons, right? Number one, you have Alaska, which we like Alaska on this podcast. Some of us more than others.
I am a fan of Alaska. Yeah, I'm going to openly say I am an Alaska fanboy.
And so you had the CEO talking about all the other benefits of that. Mm-hmm. And then you have Delta boasting, hey, we're selling 88% of our first class seats. We're not giving our elites anything or you know, very little.
Yeah.
Number one, it's a different narrative, a really horrible narrative, if you ask me. And then at the same time, Delta is talking about trying to debundle first. I don't know how you debundle it. I think it was Sam and Robert on the main show were kind of talking about it. And they're like, so I'm going to sit down in 2A and I'm going to have a meal, or I'm not going to have a meal because I didn't want to pay for the meal. But
we had a very similar
meal. And then,
yeah.
How do you manage that?
Well, we had a very similar conversation on one of our previous episodes, too. I think with Ryan Smith, you know, where we talked a little bit about this as well. But in reality, you know, I think probably as much as that, you're right. The debundling is just even more of that. I guess we can tack that onto my grievance as well. They're really into this good, better, best kind of scenario, which, I mean, have three different price points for most of their cabins, which I totally get. But it's all about taking stuff away, right? So the other two levels are about, let's take basically what they're saying is what I'm offering right now today is the best. And it's not about additive. It's about subtractive. Let's make a inferior product and two levels of inferior product, right? So that there are two other levels where we can sell, maybe at a slight discount, but obviously providing less than whatever we're providing today.
Just one caveat. We have Ryan on the next episode. We kind of recorded these a little bit out of order there.
So something to look forward to.
Exactly.
And what I was going to say is it's not even three. It's usually four because you have basic economy, whatever they call it, plus and first. But what I find interesting is kind of the flip side of what you're saying, Tom, because I have zero status with airlines. If I want a business class seat, I just pay for it with points. But I have a Delta Platinum card. And the last four Delta flights, I took four Delta flights this year. And on all four of them, I ended up with an extra legroom seat because of that Platinum card. It got me on some sort of quote unquote upgrade list, which, what are they, Delta Comfort, or whatever they call it, Economy Comfort. I ended up in a comfort seat just because of holding that credit card. So for me, it's almost the flip side of that. I feel really bad for the top tier elites because clearly if they're not getting first class upgrades and little old me with a $300 a year card is getting a bag and extra leg room, then what on earth is the point of having status?
Elite members get squeezed from both ends, right? So they're getting squeezed by the other consumers that all they, you know, just for having a heartbeat and a credit card and a good credit score, they're getting the same benefits that I might have. And I'm flying Delta 20,000 miles, 30,000 miles, 50,000 miles, you know, whatever it may be, 100,000 miles. I'm not getting maybe a slightly better treatment, but, you know, from a hard product perspective, what am I getting? Because you're probably not getting upgraded. right?
No.
To first class.
And then if you have American Platinum card, I don't fly 15 times to use 15 Sky Club visits. So every time I fly Delta, I am able to use a Sky Club and, you know, I get a bag and extra legroom. So yeah, so that's where the question is to me is not only do they not upgrade the people on top, I can't imagine any benefit at this point to earning Delta status.
I don't think it's a good value proposition. It hasn't been for a long time. I mean, I was a longtime Delta elite. You know, I have lifetime status with them. I rarely fly them because the value just isn't there. I'm much better off trying to get some better benefits from another, as good an airline as they may run. And don't get me wrong, I don't think that they're a bad airline. I don't think the product is bad, you know, when you fly them. But the truth is that they've not been pushing a value proposition. They've been pushing a premium proposition to say, hey, you will get a better product if you fly with us for your money, but you're not going to get better treatment. You're not going to get major perks. And, you know, I just think that at some point their business model is going to have to shift somewhere because they can't just keep doing this. People are going to have a hard time providing loyalty, you know, outside of maybe the fortress hubs like Atlanta and Detroit and Minneapolis or something where you just really don't have a lot of choices. I don't see them pushing a lot of customers to loyalty. I mean, unless they figure out something else, because why are you spending extra wallet share, extra time, extra money, et cetera? Why do that with Delta, you know, when there are other airlines that seem to treat you better?
Because Delta has fortress hubs that you don't have a choice.
Yeah.
And they're going to lose. Yeah. They're going to lose in Seattle and places where they're competing. Maybe they'll win in Boston because JetBlue's not as good. Although I think Marty St. George is going to do a lot of good things with JetBlue as that new president there. But I think Delta is relying on the quality of their product and the fact that
and their reputation.
People don't have much choice and reputation.
Yeah, which, you know what? Reputations can be made and lost very quickly.
That is very true.
This is so true. And I find it interesting that your bank sort of relies a little bit on that as well.
I think so. Yeah.
Your bank grievance.
My bank grievance. So my bank grievance is one I think that kind of hit quite a few people who like a free lunch from time to time. And that is the fact that Chase removed priority pass restaurants in the middle of the year. It was something that a lot of people have Chase cards. A lot of people get their priority pass from their Chase cards. And when priority pass when Chase removed this amenity from their priority pass memberships, you know, the reality is it kind of almost shut down priority pass restaurants here in North America for a lot of airports. I know that, I'll give you an example. I know one of my home airports here is Reagan National. And there were two priority pass restaurants in there prior to the summer. There are none anymore. And that probably makes sense because, you know, when you don't have Amex as a card issuer or Chase as a card issuer, being able to provide priority pass memberships that can access these things, there's no reason to participate in the program, really, because it's just such a small subset of these priority pass customers, right, that they can actually even access things. So I thought that was kind of interesting. It was something that definitely, you know, it's funny. Like, I know there were some people who were just interested in getting a Chase Sapphire card just so that they could be able to use the priority pass restaurants. And some people, you know, in some cases, you know, the rug got pulled out from under those people. So that's why I felt like it was an appropriate grievance.
No, I think that's really appropriate. I think that's really interesting. I didn't realize that Reagan National, for example, lost their priority pass restaurants. I mean, that's a next order effect that I don't think any of us were thinking of. I think most of us were like, okay, well, let's get the Capital One Venture X business card. Or those of you, because I know that you still have your prestige, were sitting pretty and saying, hey, I have this card that nobody else could get anymore, and it still gets me what I need. But if the reality is that Amex steps outside left or side stage left, and now Chase's step stage left, and that means that there's just not enough big enough pot for these restaurants to justify participating in the program, then that brings everybody down. That's something I was not tracking, to be honest with you. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah, Reagan might be an edge case because, you know, they're also doing a lot of redevelopment with kind of, you know, especially in some of the terminal that those two priority pass restaurants happened to have been in. But the reality is, I'm sure there was some impact, and I'm sure that I would not be surprised if a pretty high percentage of their revenue was coming from those Chase priority pass holders, at least toward the end there. It would not surprise me in the least.
I have to admit, the National Airport one hurt. Although I will say, having in the last, 5 months, both a Centurion Club and now a Capital One Landing in an airport as small as in Niche's National has been mm-hmm. kind of a game changer.
It really has.
I'm hoping to get there on Thursday. I'll have been there by the time this posts, but I've got an early flight and I'm really hoping to check out that Capital One.
I'm jealous.
The American Express Lounge, my God, that is a haul. I mean, it's centrally located. You know, if you're going United, it's very well located if you're flying Delta. But if you're flying American, and God forbid you're flying American out of the regional gates, the E-gates.
Yeah.
That right there is
that's a hike.
That's a walk.
You'll fill all your circles on your Apple Watch there.
Yep.
Exactly. Exactly. And you get to see the beautiful, what do we call that? The Grand Hall or the National Hall?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, there's a name for that hall, isn't there? I forget what it is. Maybe it's time to talk about your grievances, Trevor.
I have to admit, my first grievance with a loyalty program, I had a lot of hard choices to make.
There were so many choices this year, weren't there, for grievances? This is a bumper crop of grievances this year.
There really were. And there were some leading candidates, but ultimately, Turkish is the one that won. And why do I say that? I think Turkish was one of those niche cases that you really had to want it to be able to figure out how to make Turkish work and work for you. I finally put the time in to make it work. And then yes. Boom, 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 boom. It was just done.
I felt like a beneficiary of your work.
Well, yeah, because we did that February trip.
That's right.
We did an episode on. I came away from that trip so excited about Turkish. We'd flown their brand new 787 product. I felt like other than the hazelnuts in the nut dish, which shall we say disagreed with me, I felt like it really worked out well. I mean, the onboard service has some work to be done still. But the reality of the matter is that it's a great program and they've made it less great. If I recall correctly, it's almost 100% increase. It's almost double increase on some of their awards.
On some of the sweet spots, right?
And so I think that hurt a lot of people. I think that really hurt a lot of the value of the Citi thank you points.
I think Citi thank you points took a hit because, yeah, it was one of the defining advantages of that transferable currency because, you know, they had Turkish as a partner and they were kind of alone there. Or maybe not alone, but that was definitely one of the big selling points.
It really was. I really felt like that was one reason to really get excited about Citi thank you points. And I know there are others, but most of those others are shared by American Express, shared by Chase. You know, you've got Life Miles, you've got Emirates. I think the only thing that leaves Citi with is Choice Hotels.
Choice.
Choice.
Yep.
I think there might have been some mention, and this is not a grievance, that with Citi being the only credit card partner of American, that they might get transferability.
Seems likely that that was their play. I mean, at least
fingers crossed.
It would be interesting if they did not get it, right?
Yeah, but what are the next order effects of that one? Does that mean a plethora of new points infusion into the Advantage program that then turns into another devaluation? Already, American is just kind of obnoxious.
It probably does, but you know, you think there'd be a pretty big lag because I mean, you're talking about you need a whole bunch of people to start collecting thank you points, which, you know, maybe there are a lot of thank you points in circulation, but I have a feeling like there have been a lot of people who haven't been collecting thank you points. It's definitely not one of the more popular. It's definitely compared to membership rewards and ultimate rewards. It's got to be a distant third, right? In terms of transferable currency.
I would call it a fourth. I think Cap One probably gets in there before Citi.
I would agree with that.
That's probably a true statement. Yeah, just in surely even the number of products, right? Because the number of Citi cards you could even get thank you points on it continues, well, for a while there was continuing to shrink.
And some of the most rewarding cards, the Prestige isn't available. Yep. The Citi AT&T Access More, I don't think he's even available anymore. Yep. So, you know, you've got some really rewarding cards that some of us that have held on for so long are now going to be in our heyday, so to speak. But for a lot of folks, that's not going to be the case. Yeah. So to circle back, my grievance is with Turkish, not American, not Citi.
Yes.
Like I said, there's plenty of opportunity there.
So Trevor, you've got a bank grievance too, right?
Oh my. Yes. This is so this is a niche one, and it has to do with Bank of America and how it used to have an ability to pay off your balances through a means that you wouldn't normally think you could do. Mm-hmm. You used to be able to call in and essentially pay. And I'm almost concerned saying this on the public show because I don't know how widely distributed this disseminated in this information is, but it's dead now. But you used to be able to call in to a special number at Bank of America and pay with like a Visa gift card or a multi-use card from Flues. And that was a big deal because, you know, you're getting 1 or 1.5% back on fees by paying that off. And it's another, what Sam and Robert like to call, quote unquote, release valves from Flues. And so I think that was a big, big hit from Bank of America. It's a small contingent of us that were using it, but gosh, that really, really hurt.
Big impact to you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, big impact. There's a lot of cards out there that had some really good opportunities. And so I'm going to say that one is my grievance. So before we jump into the feats of strength, I want to revisit something that we talked about last year on the last Festivus episode, and that was the Alaskan-Hawaiian merger. I think we talked about it and kind of opined whether or not that would actually work out. I think it's interesting that here we are a year later, it's approved. On the air show, the CEO, who I can never remember his name.
Ben Minicucci.
Yes, Minicucci. Had a great interview with Cranky Flyer, John Ostrower, and Brian Summers on how incredible the synergies are for Alaska and Hawaiian. I think he said something to the effect of, on day one, they can increase utilization of 5 to 7 aircraft that were not being properly utilized.
I think the utilization increases by 7 airframes is I think what he said.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Exactly. I mean, just imagine the bottom line impact on that. Aircraft don't make any money when they're on the ground. I think the Alaska-Hawaiian merger is going to be really interesting. I think there were some backroom deals made with Department of Transportation as far as what they could and couldn't do, both with the loyalty program and I think with some of the route structure. I don't know all those off the top of my head, but it sounds like even with this merger, we're probably looking at a couple of years of stability. And so those folks that, and I'll say this might have been a miracle. It's not my miracle, but you know, a miracle, a Festivus miracle might have been those people that had transferred a ton of membership rewards points with that transfer bonus to Hawaiian in the hope that they'd be able to then transfer to Alaska. I mean, that could be a boon for a lot of people.
I had a chance to chat with Alaska Airlines loyalty team in October at the BILT event. And it definitely sounded like they were planning on operating as two distinct programs for longer than I expected. So yeah, I'm glad that they have opened up this transfer one-to-one window as early as they did. But it definitely doesn't sound like they're in any rush to merge into a single program.
Well, I think that might have been one of the DOT backroom deals. I call it backroom deals, not saying it was really a backroom deal. I think it was probably publicly said because we understand it to be. But I think one of the concerns was that Hawaiian still existed. And Minicucci on that air show interview point blank said, any flight that is to, from, or internal to intra-island will be Hawaiian marketed because they actually get a significant premium on the Hawaiian experience when going to the islands. So your point is exactly valid. The Hawaiian brand will stick around. How they're going to do it, I don't think any of us know. No other airline, I think, on the planet does it that way.
And I think that was one of the things we opined, right? Was or just how unique the situation was last year. I think you had this kind of unique situation where two airlines merge and both brands survive, which is very interesting. And probably one of the only times, one of the few times it happens outside of maybe Europe, where you've got those kind of national flag carriers where that kind of prevents them from being absorbed, you know, 100% into these big airline groups. But this is definitely going to be the first time here in North America, I think we're going to see this kind of acquisition result in the continued use of both brands.
I was expecting to see an Air France KLM Flying Blue situation where Air France and KLM operated as two distinct airlines, but they shared a frequent flyer program. And it doesn't even seem like they're in any rush to do that.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of interest in how this will go. And candidly, if Hawaiian sticks around that way, what's it going to look like? Is there still going to be that sweet spot, for example, with Korean Air, where you can redeem, I think it's 60,000 points for a round trip to Hawaii from continental US? Is that going to be a sweet spot that has extra life, perhaps?
I don't know. Well, with them announcing Seattle to Seoul, I see a little bit of frenemy happening. because I don't believe Korean Air and Alaska are in any kind of code share, or, I mean, they may be in a code share agreement, but they're definitely not in a revenue share alliance or that kind of agreement. So they clearly are gunning for some trans-Pacific international long-haul flying, which Ben Minicucci also talked about, I think, on his recent interview.
But I think that was the low-hanging fruit.
It is.
Hawaiian was flying there anyway, so now let's just do it from Seattle versus Honolulu.
Yep.
Okay, let's shift gears. Let's continue to talk feats of strength. Traditionally, the feats of strength has been your favorite redemption or miles and points usage over the course of the year. But last year, we decided to switch it up, and I think we had a lot of great conversations, so I want to keep that trend. It's one that's a feat of strength toward an airline or loyalty program and one toward a bank. It doesn't necessarily have to be the best or best value, just one that defined your 2024 and you will remember going forward. So Dia started our grievances. Tom, why don't you start our strengths?
Yeah, you know, I thought about this for a little bit, and for loyalty programs in particular, there was one that really came to mind. And that was the Virgin Atlantic move to dynamic pricing on their award loyalty program. I, as many people, I think, assumed when they heard this first, it kind of had all the markings of Delta, you know, and some of their management style of like, oh, we're going dynamic. This is an opportunity for them to really start exploding the price for some of these award redemptions, especially on, you know, Virgin Atlantic metal across the Atlantic. And I was pleasantly surprised, you know, and I didn't actually even make use of it, but I just felt it was so memorable that it went from clearly everybody thinking it was a negative to suddenly becoming an opportunity for people. Because when they went dynamic, they actually lowered the price on a lot of these off-peak, off-demand, premium award tickets and actually created an opportunity for people. I don't know if they did that intentionally. I don't know exactly what the thought process was around it. Clearly, they're making a lot of buzz, and clearly, they got a lot of redemptions, you know, I think, from this. So I guess they probably saw some positives there. And quite honestly, you know, Virgin on some of their planes have somewhat subpar products, especially in the premium cabin, you know, with some of those like regular herringbone type seats. So it's probably a good thing that they did this. And just because of the kind of huge flip from it being what is perceived as a negative to a huge positive, it just made a lot of sense. It made a big reaction to me, and which is why I made it a feat of strength, because I can't imagine a lot of people who did redeem this felt pretty strong with the value they received from what at first blush looked like a devaluation.
I have to throw in there real quick, Trevor, a shout out to anyone who's willing to fly economy, because I just did a couple of weeks ago. I used Virgin points and it was 12,000 Virgin points to fly yes. Air France nonstop from Dulles to Paris, which is ridiculous because the taxes were like less than $100 on the ticket. So for those of that are willing to fly economy, I've even seen 5,000 mile seats from
what a bargain.
Dulles and JFK to London. So there are some crazy deals out there, even at the lower end.
Tom, you were happy to fly Virgin for what, 20 or 25,000 points in economy?
Actually, even before this change, I think there were some 12,000 economy, so there or 10,000 economy, at least for the nonstop from Dulles. So mind you, there were fairly high taxes and surcharges, but as far as miles out of pocket, yeah, I was more than happy to do. So yeah, so seeing some of these values go even down further. And of course, I think the surcharges they charge on Air France are much better than what they may even charge on Virgin Atlantic themselves. So some of the partner awards are, you know, that's just even a more amazing value. But I think just overall, I've generally been a pretty good big fan of Virgin, at least their loyalty program, because I know I've redeemed a ton of Virgin Atlantic miles, whether it be for cruises, economy awards, or upper class awards as well.
And Virgin pretty much is always on a transfer bonus from somebody.
They seem to be a perennial transfer bonus customer.
Lots of opportunities, although that's an interesting point. I think a couple of weeks ago, they came out and said that guaranteed award availability is no longer a thing based on feedback from their members. So with the good comes maybe a little bit of not good.
Yeah. Well, I guess the jury's out on what the long-term prospects are, but I'll just say that the 2024 data points that we've seen have been pretty good. So hope it continues.
And lots of opportunity. I mean, when you lower the point cost that much, and they may have even lowered some of the taxes and fees, that could be wrong. That really opens it up. It makes it more accessible to folks. Dia, you mentioned that. I don't know if I see myself flying that five or maybe I see myself flying it when it's a five-hour flight in the North Atlantic in the wintertime when you've got that tailwind. But you've got more accessibility for a lot of people when you lower that price point like you have. or they have?
Because for me, it would have been the difference between going and not going, especially because I bought the ticket on like 4 days notice. So to be able to find a 12,000 mile ticket over the pond on 4 days notice, I was happy to sit in the back.
What? Yeah.
Although in the moment, I will say I was regretting my life choices, but I did make it.
And you're still smiling, you know, a couple of weeks later. So
totally worth it.
Really worth it. So Tom, that's a loyalty program and that's a strong one. I got to say that is a strong one. What about your banks? Your bank feet of strength.
You know, I've got something. I mentioned Chase a moment ago in my grievances, and Chase giveth and Chase taketh away. I would say the feet of strength on the bank side is I have really been a beneficiary of Chase rolling out their Chase Sapphire lounges. We were talking about National earlier, but you know, I actually live a lot closer to Dulles. And I will say the Dulles experience with Chase adding a Sapphire lounge to kind of the A gates there. It's a very nice lounge. It's in the old Etihad lounge, and I think Etihad still, I think may even still be branded Etihad in a part of it, but it definitely has the same kind of menu and look, feel, style of the other Chase Sapphire lounges. And I feel the food and beverage quality is very high. I would say probably higher than American Express. I don't have enough data points for Capital One really to say how they compare to Capital One, but they're definitely putting a very strong foot forward on what they offer in that lounge and all the other Chase lounges that I've been to. And I've been to now Boston, LaGuardia, San Diego, and they all present a very, very nice, you know, environments.
This was my first experience at a Chase lounge. I just went when I went to France a couple weeks ago. I used that Chase lounge and I was really appreciative of that it's a made-to-order menu. And that's the biggest difference between Chase and Cap One / Amex. And the BA Lounge in Dulles, I think, is an order menu as well, which is nice. It's an upside and a downside. If you have the time to order, yes. I think it's great. But what the Capital One Lounge in Dulles, or Capital One Lounges in general, in my opinion, where they excel is, one, they are really good at having solo portions so that you don't have to go to a buffet and like do the scoop with the day-old penne a la vodka sitting there. They do these really pretty individual portions that you can just grab little plates. But they also do grab and go, which is a wonderful thing if you've got 15 minutes before you have to board your flight and you know your flight's either not going to have food or going to have garbage food. You can go in, you can grab a hummus wrap and a salad and take those to go on your flight. That's where Capital One excels. The Etihad Lounge, because I had an hour, I was able to, you know, enjoy a veggie burger and enjoy the experience. But that's, I think, where the Capital One program really shines in comparison.
Yep. I would agree. But, you know, if you've got the time, you know, enjoy, you know, there's a reason, I think, to go to the airport a little bit early and budget some time. There really wasn't as much of a reason, I think, especially not flying domestic at Dulles. And
although I will warn you, when I went on a 7 o'clock on a Friday, they were on a wait. And so it did take me 15 minutes to get
that in. Is one negative. And I forget if Chase has set up their waiting list to be accessible online.
They have a texting system. So they go text you.
They have a texting system. Yeah. Amex and what Capital One now have kind of the ability for you to add yourself to the wait list a little early before you get there.
And we've had to do that, you and I, Tom, when traveling. I think most of the time when I travel with my family, we get lucky. And I don't know if it's because we have a cute little toddler that is just so excited to be in the airport and that, like, you know, we'll sometimes go like the, you know, do the plane flying motion or what. But what I've found is that we've gotten a lot luckier as a family. It could just be because we leave, you know, for the airport like 3 or 4 hours before. We actually plan to spend time at the airport because that helps us just kind of get. Sometimes it's almost more of an experience to get to the airport earlier. I know that some people just want to get there, get on the plane. But especially as we're flying to Europe, we want to have a nice meal. We want to make sure that all of us get into the right frame of mind. And in some cases, that's going to the Chase Etihad Lounge and going into the kids' room where they have a nice, cute little plane, like kind of rocking a rocker. They've got a bunch of plain like pillows and it's soundproof. So if our daughter needs to let her lungs work, nobody hears. To the same point, if she really doesn't want to hear anybody else and doesn't want to hear a crowded lounge, she doesn't hear it. It works both ways. And I don't think a lot of people realize that. A lot of people probably think, oh, good, the kids are going into the family room. We won't hear them. But the reality is we're all in silence. And you've got the loud guy who's on the Etihad nonstop talking about how he's going to Dubai and buy in gold.
This kind of goes to something we've talked about before, which is just kind of pace of travel kind of thing. And I think there's some people that want to, you know, spend a little time. I think there, and that is a valid point, to get to the airport and reduce the amount of waiting time that you have, try to optimize because your time is valuable to you. But for me, you know, I think what I value is not being rushed, not having to do a dash through the airport to try to make it to your gate on time, to be able to have something to eat maybe that is reasonably good and you actually would enjoy versus, you know, some sort of prepackaged nonsense that you might have had to settle for that is sold, you know, that sub 7-Eleven quality. So, you know, you have options, and, you know, I think I probably subscribe to the camp of, you know what, I'm going to give up some of my time to be able to have a more relaxing, a less stressed experience, knowing I've got plenty of time to get to the gate, plenty of time to kind of react to whatever comes to me because I've budgeted extra time. That's just kind of my style.
Well said. Well said. Now, we have a fun one for next. Dia, so for our listeners, we put some hints about what we were going to do so we didn't like kind of overlap. But Dia, I have to be honest with you. I read your loyalty program answer, and I don't even know what it, like, I had to Google it. So I think this is a really great one. And I think that's one of the reasons why I love having you on the show, or we love having you on the show, is because you bring such a different perspective from the way that we travel. So Dia, what is your loyalty program feat of strength?
My loyalty program feat of strength actually is directly tied to my grievance, in that it's an offshoot and a solution to my grievance. My loyalty program feat of strength has to do with One Key. One Key is the reward program for the Expedia umbrella of companies, and they've expanded it to Vrbo and Hotels.com. Now, I know that some people were upset when Hotels.com changed their rewards program because there were definitely ways to milk it. But for me, the fact that they added Vrbo completely makes it a win, because I now earn points on my Vrbo in addition to whatever points I earn from my Chase card. So like I was just in Marseille. And so I paid $80 a night for a one bedroom apartment overlooking the harbor, really just adorable, perfect location, whatever. So it was like $400. So not only did I earn my Sapphire Reserve 3X, I also learned 3X with my One Key program. And you might be thinking, well, that's 12 bucks. That's not that much money. But what makes it really nice is you not only can use that money toward Vrbo or Expedia, you can use it toward Expedia and their activities. So it doesn't take me very long. Like 1 week rental is enough for me to have a free food tour on my next trip. It adds up pretty quickly. And then you also deal with their rewards program where they call them like units of activity. So like one night is an activity, or one booking of an activity per person is an activity. And if you get to 30 of them within a year, which is, and one like car rental day is an activity, one is. So on a 1 week trip, you can get platinum for the entire year. And then you earn even like more with their program. So I just love the fact that you can finally earn actual rewards points on vacation rentals without having to go through, because we're starting to see like Marriott Homes and Villas and Hyatt and all these other things. But one, those are in much more limited locations than something like Vrbo. And two, they tend to be more expensive because they tend to tack on a management fee for the privilege of joining a program like Marriott or Hyatt. So I can find the same property that I'll see on Marriott Homes and Villas. I can usually find the same property on Vrbo. It's going to be 5 to 10% less. And now I actually earn points for it.
Wow, this is just packed. Okay, I have to unpack this myself, or for myself, right? Right. Okay, so part one is VRBO is generally less than if you go through Marriott Hotels and Villas, possibly Airbnb, possibly the Hyatt program.
I will not say it's less than Airbnb. Usually okay. The same as Airbnb, because they do charge a fee, but it's usually about the same fee as Airbnb. So I find those two to be equivalent. Occasionally Airbnb is like 1% less, but I think Vrbo has a better policy in general, like with,
and I've heard that
shady stuff. I just feel like Vrbo is better vetted. So I tend to go with Vrbo these days.
Okay. So part one is VRBO generally better than going through a Marriott or a Hyatt or whatever the loyalty programs that we know?
Generally better pricing. If you can find the same unit, generally it's better priced. Yes.
Point two is you're stacking your rewards.
Yes.
You're still getting your chase card, so you still have the protections, you still have the points that you earn from that, but now you're getting a couple of percentage points more with this One Key Rewards program. But the other thing that I found interesting is that, and you've got the status, the events that platinum status to earn more. We love that. We always love getting status for the purpose of status sake. I joke. But I didn't realize Expedia had experiences.
Oh, yeah.
Airbnb experiences were a thing. And then I don't even know if they're still a thing because I was trying to find them at one point and like I could see vestiges of a program, but not the program anymore. I've been looking at, you know, usually just Viator. Nick shared Eat With, which has been incredible. We've only done one event or one experience with that, but I was really impressed with that. And so now whenever I go someplace, that's the first place I go because a unique experience like that is exactly what I'm looking for. But to know that Expedia has that, and number one, and number two, that you can earn enough of these One Key Rewards points to be able to leverage the Expedia experiences is a really cool thing. So
yeah,
you really brought a lot with that one feat of strength. We haven't even heard the rest of them. And I feel like that might be the feat of strength of Festivus.
Because you can also do it with car rental, as long as you're getting a decent, like, because I know a lot of times Autoslash will use Priceline, but if you can get a reasonable price on Expedia, you can also use Expedia points then to pay for your experiences. Yeah. Basically, the way I think about Expedia is for a long time, and I think they still do, they run the Chase backend. So if you can find something bookable on Chase, it's because it was originally bookable on Expedia. And right. I have for a long time booked my experiences using 1.5 Chase points. And I still do if I want to spend Chase points. But it's basically the same search engine. And if it's on Viator, there's no chance that it's not on Expedia.
Mm-hmm. I just love, you know, a lot of times, you know, the best part of having you on this show and just listening to you in general is just how you kind of illuminate the blind spots, you know, that people have, you know, that there are these other programs that provide value, but you just don't think about them or they're not part of the normal thought process sometimes for the miles and points community. Cause you know, people are so focused on Hyatt or they're so focused on Hilton or something like that. And they forget that these other alternative programs, things have changed. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like you said, you know, I remember for a long time, people did kind of try to hack the buy10hotels.com stays and get one free. And a lot of people, I think, again, were not happy with the change to the One Key program. But, you know, on the flip side, one door closes, another one opens. And it's great to just have the ability to have that vision and see some of these things probably have a little bit more niche uses sometimes, but also are incredibly great things to just have in your kind of arsenal or inventory of miles and points. When you need them, you need them. And they really do fill a pretty strong need. Just like you said, in relation to your grievance, especially when you've got a group of people trying to visit Europe and needing to put more than two people, two adults in a unit of dwelling. So.
Exactly. And it's also a case where there are just, especially with hotel loyalty programs, and not even just with Hyatt, with sometimes all the programs, there are just wide swaths of the planet that you wouldn't visit if you were only staying in chain hotels. I mean, like 2 years ago.
Because they don't exist.
Yeah, exactly. And 2 years ago, we spent the summer in Béziers, France, which is in the middle of Languedoc. And the only hotel within, I don't know, 50 miles of where we rented an apartment was like a sketchy Best Western. So it's such a different experience. And we were there for a month and we had, you know, a 4-bedroom apartment and it was fantastic. And you just lose the opportunity to even consider so much of the planet if you are only looking at where hotel chains lie.
It's so true. I mean, I think there are many parts of the world where, or even some of the North American chains that we're used to are not well represented. I can think back to, we had Spencer Howard on the show some time ago, and he was visiting parts of New Zealand, parts of Australia. And, you know, Accor was super strong, you know, or there were some other chains that might've been strong, but our usual Hilton, Marriott, Hyatt, you know, those type of brands were just not anywhere available. And, you know, you really need to go outside of kind of the standard big three, you know, or whatever hotel chains to find a points or miles based option. And in many cases, it's better not to, you know, when you're in that type of situation, maybe it's better to, you know, just pay cash or find another way. This is part of that other way.
Exactly. That leads me really well, talking about like programs outside of the big three, that leads me really well into my bank feat of strength, because the program that I was most excited about this year, and it's with both Citi and now with Wells Fargo, with their transferable prints program on the journey, is Choice 1-2. I've got such tremendous value out of that 1-2 choice program for my spring break this year. I think we talked just as I'd just gotten back from it, but I spent 4,000 Citi points a night to have a hotel room in Panama City that was literally on the Panama Canal. My balcony was here. The canal was here. It was insane. It had literally the best view in Panama because it used to be on the American military base. Now, you know, full disclosure, it used to be a country inn and suite, so I'm not going to call it fancy. But location-wise, and it was clean and it was perfectly fine stay, but location-wise, it was insane. And it was 4,000 Citi points a night. So when you start dealing with 1-2 on choice, I know if you're going to Scandinavia, for instance, there are so many great choice options. And the other thing about choice that's so clutch is, and granted, this is a bug, not a feature, but it seems to be a bug that they don't have any intention of fixing. You can book any size room that's available for the same price. So there have been numerous situations where I've been able to get suites for the same price as a base level room on Choice Points. So that's what I did in Panama. I had what was considered an ocean view suite, and it was literally, you know, ocean front, and it was a one bedroom suite, and it was the same price as a basic hotel room because that's how their program prices.
It makes me think that it's just because the number of people who do choice redemptions, I'm sure, is such a small number compared to some of these other major loyalty hotel brands that, you know, I feel like with the, and Choice is not a small program. They have a lot of properties around the world. And I just think a lot of these Choice hotels just aren't set up to differentiate their award pricing with the different room categories. It's probably a standard template where it just goes out and they're like, okay, here's your rate for your hotel. And unless somebody went in and actually customized it and said, hey, I'm going to charge a little bit more for this suite or this upgraded category of room, I just think there's probably such an infrequent use of this. And other people have talked about it. Hopefully if you haven't heard this.
It's been around for a decade.
For a long time. Yeah. But, you know, hey, listeners, I mean, pay attention. I mean, this is old knowledge that's been out there for a while, but it's valid today, which is there are going to be some outsized value in Choice hotels, not only because of the 2-to-1 transfer rate for Citi and for Wells Fargo, but also because you can book into huge. And, you know, I remember looking at one of these extended stay hotels in Sydney. It was a 4-bedroom. It was a 4-bedroom unit. And it was the same price as a 1-bedroom unit. That's the kind of stuff that's out there. Now, mind you, I don't know how nice, but I ended up not staying there. But I had booked it with my Choice Points because I was like, you know what? That just sounds like too good to be true. Let me see if I can actually book it and get a stay out of it. But yeah, that was just amazing when I thought about it. You know, 4-bedroom unit in an extended stay building for, I think it was like, you know, 15,000 Choice Points or something like that in Australia. And it was really great.
Hey, can you send that to me? I'm planning to be in Sydney.
There you go. And you need a big room. Yeah.
You need all the space.
If you're like someone who really only wants luxury, Choice also books now into Preferred Hotels and Resorts.
That's true.
Program. So like I stayed in Chicago in September. I was in a Preferred Hotels and Resorts program that participates via Chase. And it was 56,000 Choice Points. So it was what, $280, which for downtown Chicago in a pretty busy season is not a terrible rate. Yeah. And I was in this really cool hotel called the Sophie, and it was literally where Barack and Michelle Obama, when I looked outside my window, there was a plaque across the street on the ground, and it was where Barack and Michelle Obama had their first kiss. And it was said on this plaque,
what we went a landmark.
To Baskin Robbins for our date. And I kissed her right at this spot and she tasted like chocolate. It was so sweet. But then they actually like come to that hotel for their anniversary to visit their spot. So you get with Preferred Hotels and Resorts, you end up in these not cookie cutter type properties. You end up in these really small
right.
boutique, interesting, fun,
independent space. Luxury, independent boutique type of hotel properties.
Right. And you're still getting a crazy choice point to redemption rate.
And that's a good thing to also search for, because I know that they participate with the choice program and you can use choice points to book a lot of those. But they're also, they have their own program, point program as well, right? That is also a city partner, I believe. Also with that, I think 2-to-1 rate or something similar, where you might want to do a comparison. I'm sure there's a lot of times where it's the same amount, regardless of the two programs, but definitely shop around, do your due diligence, right?
Okay, so I just have to clarify here because I think I heard something, but it is not computing to me. And it could be just because choice is just such a blind spot.
A blind spot.
It's a blind spot, and it shouldn't be. I mean, Sam has talked about how incredible choice is. I think they're associated with Strawberry Resorts in the Nordics.
And all those Nordic choice hotels up in Scandinavia. Yep.
So, Dia, did I hear you say that you can find the choice hotels on the Chase portal? Or did I mishear you? Okay,
Choice and Chase,
they're very similar. Okay, so this is pretty incredible. I don't think we've had as cohesive a Festivus, I'll say, linkage of grievances and feats of strength as what you have laid out. This is next level stuff, right?
Problem, solution, you know, that's all we need to think.
That's right.
I love it. You know, you talk about the problem of family rooms, and then all of your strengths are all geared towards solving that problem. It's just incredible. And why am I harping on that? Because I'm trying to stall, because the hardest for me was the feat of strength for a loyalty program. We said that there were plenty of grievances out there, and I had a really, really hard time coming up with a loyalty program feat of strength. Partially because my original feat of strength really deserved miracle status. And unfortunately, there just weren't that many feats of strength for us to really talk about. I don't want to reuse. I had originally wanted to just reuse the Alaska-Hawaiian merger because there's a lot of those synergies, a lot of those opportunities. But I'm not going to use that. I am going to just talk about Air Canada and the fact that Dulles happens to now have yet another wonderful flight that we've been able to leverage Air Canada Aeroplan for, which is Swiss from Zurich. I continue to find Aeroplan to both be an incredibly frustrating program, but also a program of immense value. While United gives you the opportunity for $80,000 if you've got the Explorer credit or one of their credit cards, or $88,000 if you don't, to cancel whenever you need to, Aeroplan gives you the chance to pay $15,000 more. And if there's availability when you decide that this is really the flight you want to take, or this is really the trip you want to take, if there's $70,000 save or availability to Europe, they'll let you do it. And I think that is an opportunity, and it's an opportunity that has worked out for me. I don't think it's incredibly repeatable in high times, but I've found it really has worked in other times. I'll give you an example. We just published an episode a week ago on our Thanksgiving trip. I held this flight on Swiss. It was via Zurich. It was United's metal. That's the other side, right? With Swiss flying to Zurich, everybody wants to fly Swiss. And so that leaves extra award space on United's metal to Zurich. Rising tide floats all boats, right? And what we found was we said, okay, fine. This is actually the flight we want to take. It doesn't get us there as soon as we want, but nothing else is coming available. Let's just agree. And so I call up Air Canada, and I was thinking that I might just be able to talk my way into getting the saver space on the Zurich flight. Turns out that that doesn't work. You learn things. You got to try things, and you learn things. And then they come up with, well, you could fly via Frankfurt. You could leave a half hour later, not a big deal, right? You know, out of Dulles. And instead of having a 4-hour layover, you'll have a 3-hour layover in Frankfurt. And I'm like, I mean, it's my birthday all over again. How could this not be great? And other than, as I talked about on that trip, losing our stroller for a day and a half, it was a much more ideal itinerary. And so my feat of strength is Air Canada's Aeroplan program and how that $85,000 or whatever the refundable can really work for you to give you close in flexibility. if you're not quite committed to that flight, but you still need to book something and you don't want to commit all those ultimate rewards points, because that, let's be honest, that's how we generate all these United miles. It's always through ultimate rewards. And so you don't want to maroon that many ultimate rewards points in your United account, because you'd rather be staying at all these wonderful Hyatt Vendomes and Park Hyatt.
Are you dangling that as bait?
Don't take the bait. Don't take the bait.
I won't, because I just want to add on to your Air Canada Aeroplan love, because I totally agree. We, last year, I think, did the JFK to Geneva flight via Aeroplan. And I think it might have even been 60,000 in J. And the Swiss product was fantastic. We really enjoyed the experience. But I wanted to specifically give a shout out to Aeroplan for its Copa sweet spots. If you are trying to get anywhere in Central America or Northern South America, or if you're content with having maybe not a lie flat seat, Southern South America, I have never not seen availability on Copa at Saver with Aeroplan. Copa has something like 14 gateways out of the United States to Panama City. It's a ridiculous amount of coverage. And you're always going to find something. You're always going to find a way to get to Panama, and then from Panama, anywhere else you want to go.
My gosh. I jokingly typed in our chat, trigger alert, because we just recently booked our Martin Luther King Jr. trip. And we're going to Morocco, but I really wanted to get down to Argentina. And the only way I could do it was I could get us down to Rio de Janeiro, but then Rio de Janeiro to get to Argentina was just incredibly expensive or impossible. Like, you'd have to go to like Sao Paulo. There's a Fifth Freedom from Emirates that goes gig to EZE. And then everything else is Fifth Freedoms from Sao Paulo to EZE. And nothing was available, which is mind boggling. But maybe everybody else wants to do the same thing I want to do, which is I want to get down to Argentina. It looks like they've got a great story going on now. I can never pronounce the new president's name well.
Javier Milei.
Yeah, Milei is turning things around, and it gives me confidence in wanting to go back. I mean, I was there 10 years ago, and I enjoyed it. But it's just like the hardest place to go. And my wife and I kept going back and forth on Argentina, and she's like, well, maybe Copa's not really that bad. And then I'm like, Barca loungers. And she's like, But Argentina would be nice. And I kept going back and forth, Barca Lounger, not Barca Lounger, Barca Lounger. You might get the lay flat on the 800, but you don't get that to the DC area. Like, so you're guaranteed at least half the flight is going to suck. Sorry to be so crass.
That's the thing, is that it's really no different than coast to coast. That's where Copa excels, is that their hub and spoke network, none of their flights are really longer than coast to coast. If you can do coast to coast in a recliner, you can do to Panama City in a recliner. I will agree, back to back is kind of, I mean, we did it. I mean, full disclosure, my family did it. We did it to Buenos Aires, and then we did it home from Santiago, and both legs were on Copa. And I think the flight from Panama City to Santiago was 6, maybe 6.5. And the flight to Buenos Aires was 5.5. And the flight from here to Panama City is 5.5. So that's how I see it. I see it as coast to coast flights. So if you can do coast to coast. And the selling point for me is that in J, and they may even serve it in coach. I've always flown J because it's 25,000 miles. So why wouldn't you? They serve Florida Canyon 16 rum, which is just a pretty decent pour for them to serve as like a house rum. So that tends to take the edge off the Barca Lounger.
Okay, you're starting to speak my language. I will just say this. One of my best friends just moved back to Northern California. The last time that we saw them, all of us flew to Langkawi, Malaysia, because otherwise it would mean one family would have to fly in Barca loungers across the country. So when you say if you can do a transcon in a Barca lounger, I prefer not. I mean, I say that humorously because I'm going to get out there eventually.
There's definitely a United lie flat option to, I think, San Francisco, maybe LAX. So you can do it lie flat if you prefer.
I love how you said that as you're refilling your wine. And I think our listeners can hear that.
Did you actually hear the pour?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's just so appropriate, just as we're kind of talking about first world problems.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So Aeroplan, you've just shared another wonderful golden nugget on Aeroplan, because I've been looking and thinking, trying to build myself mentally up for a Copa marathon, and it sounds like that might be the thing that pushes us over.
They do the free break in Panama. Take a break in between and hang out in Panama City for a couple of days. That'd make it so much easier.
Or give you more time to dread the worst of the two flights.
I can't help you. I give up.
I gave up a long time ago. This man is allergic to non-life flats. So, you know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? But you know what, Trevor, I think one of the things that you also probably was a little bit easier for you, maybe for Feast and Strength, was kind of the bank category of this. It's probably a little clearer what you needed to kind of communicate to us as a Feast and Strength there, right? Maybe a little less, definitely a lot easier than loyalties, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This was just gangbusters for me. So we don't talk a lot about the spend side and how we earn points on this show. Just in general, we're more focused on the stories that we get from the points that we earn. But American Express had this incredible 10x referral program where effectively you got 10x up to $25,000, so 250,000 points on dining if you referred a friend to a new card. This came out initially, and Sam and Robert covered it on the main show extensively. And I'll be honest, I did not jump on this immediately. I was like, oh gosh, dining is going to be a pain. How am I going to, I don't have enough release valves if I use some of the manufactured spending techniques that we have. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I'm just going to leave it aside. The last month, things changed and release valves were opened up. I have to give absolute kudos to Sam and Robert, because I felt like every episode they put out, they were talking to me. And I was finally convinced that I needed to jump on this. I jumped on this to the tune of 5 or 6 referrals between my wife and my account. That generated, I think, we'll say it was 5. That generated 1.25 million. And that didn't even include the sign-up bonuses I was able to attain as well. That led to a banner year for American Express membership rewards for us. And I'm not going to say it's life-changing, but it was definitely year-changing for me and for the family. We ended up burning over 1 million miles on a summer trip to Europe this year. And as we were on this summer trip, I'm replenishing the American Express membership rewards accounts because of this promotion. And it was absolutely incredible. There's a really good promotion out right now, I think, as well, but it's a little bit harder to find, and you're not going to be able to scale it the way that you could do the referrals. I'll just leave it at American Express. You're my bestie this year. Keep the good times rolling.
I think you got a fan.
I'll toast to that. Express.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. There we go. American Express may be the, we're lifting a glass to you, our friends. Okay, so this is a demonstration of poor planning, because now I get to go back to back. We started with Dia, then we went to Tom. Now, my friends, we're at Festivus Miracles, our most favorite part of the episode, I dare say. My most favorite part, because this is where we really get to celebrate something that really made the year for us. And whether it's going back to a warm weather location or seeing someone or something that without miles and points might have been cost prohibitive, or being incredibly surprised by a change that we actually like. We have so many things to celebrate this year. And so just to recap, a Festivus Miracle is the deal of the year. Whatever brought you the most miraculous joy in the miles and points game this year. I've led into it enough. I'm going to identify probably the most impactful devaluation or enhancement of a program. And I think it actually beats yours, Tom, in the Virgin Atlantic enhancement or going to a dynamic award.
I don't agree, but okay.
Oh. Those are fighting words.
Took the words out of my mouth, Dia.
I'm going to sit back and let this fly.
Alaska made a move to distance-based. And that, for me, personally, has opened up incredible doors at a time when our other go-tos for short distance flights were Southwest, and Southwest is their fares continue to go up, up, and up. Soon, Southwest fares are going to be taking out Starlink satellites because that's how high these things are going. And so, personally speaking, we used to fly Southwest. We have the companion pass. We haven't used it in 6 months. We used to fly Southwest down to Jacksonville to see my folks. And it was a regular occurrence when we could do it for like 10 or 15,000 points. And then you've got the companion pass. It makes it really affordable. Well, the problem is that, as I said, these Southwest fares are starting to take out Starlink satellites. They're so high. And Alaska comes in and says, we're going to go distance-based. And oh, by the way, we're going to charge a little bit of a fee if you want to book on our partners. But our partners are releasing Saberspace. And you can book them, in some cases, as low as 4,500 points. If you want first, double it, 9,000 points. So now I'm in a situation where I've gone down to see my folks. We've gone down. In fact, we've got a trip coming up in February that I've already booked to Florida. And we're booking these things for first class for less than what we were going to pay in Southwest points to fly in the back of the bus. Well, in the single cabin bus, at least for, you know, however long it takes Southwest to add extra legroom seats. So for me, my Festivus miracle is Alaska's quote-unquote enhancement that we actually do like. And I think it's just an incredible opportunity. I've probably talked about it far too many times on this podcast, but it is finally seeing something that we like. It is the new British Airways.
It was a big improvement, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, it reminds me of the old days of Avios. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're the new British Airways, obvious.
Yep, that's fair. Only reason why I'm going to disagree with you that it's not quite as big as Virgin was just because I just felt like the Virgin one just had so much more negativity around the expectation, and then it just flipped. So I just felt like the Delta was bigger. But I also don't want to disagree that it was a pretty amazing change that they made to the award chart. And suddenly, you're right, there's been so since they've made that change, a whole new world of award redemption has been opened. Where, you know, again, what was once only a British Airways obvious kind of market, basically Alaska's replaced it. For those of us, especially on the East Coast, you know, that have access to American Airlines as a partner and their route network, where, you know, a lot of these flights, these shorter, more expensive flights, where they tend to also have a fair amount of standard award availability, suddenly it gets quite interesting. And you're right, in Florida, the Florida market in particular, for us, you know, here in the DC area, it's so nice to have American as a partner that can, you know, basically you can get very, very reasonable economy and first class award availability to the Sunshine State. So,
yeah, Alaska for me is my first go-to for any domestic travel now. If I'm not going to pay cash, that's the first place I look.
It's hard not to use Alaska for a lot of domestic flying these days. That's absolutely the truth.
So much so that when we had that connector working between American Express, Hawaiian, and Alaska, and I don't know if it's working now, but we had a little bit of a snafu the last time I tried to transfer, or we tried to transfer points. But when that connector was working, we transferred 500,000 membership rewards points without the bonus to Alaska because we saw so much value there.
Yep. A lot of good value there.
Okay. So I hope I didn't set the expectations too lofty, but
are the miracles getting more miraculous or less miraculous is what you're telling me, huh?
If you ask me, I think Diaz is getting even more miraculous. You, my friend, are going to have a really hard show to follow.
I want to kind of preface my Festivus miracle because it's not just the logistics and it's not just what I did. It's who I did it with. We put, and I have to give full credit to Kevin Song here, there was a group of it, about a dozen of us, that went in June to see Taylor Swift in Madrid. And the logistics of it were a sweet spot on Iberia, which is 34,000 miles from the East Coast to Madrid in business class, which is, I think, one of the best deals out there, especially because Iberia defines off-peak to me in very comical terms. So pretty much anything that's not, I don't know, Christmas Day is off-peak. So you can get some amazing deals. But it wasn't just the fact that I got a sweet spot to go. And it wasn't just the fact that I got to see Taylor Swift. It was the fact that I got to see it in such an amazing group of people. And Kevin really kind of facilitated us making an entire event out of the experience. And I recently read on The Economist, they did like a survey of all the cities, and Madrid ended up being the third cheapest city to see Taylor Swift in. It was Rio, then Stockholm, then Madrid. I believe that Kevin may have seen her in both Rio and Stockholm. But Madrid, it was a fantastic experience. I wasn't a huge Swiftie before I went. I am a huge Swiftie now. Anyone that got to see the Eras Tour understands that. It was a 3.5 hour show without a break. I've never seen anything like it. She was phenomenal. But what I really remember is that the night before the concert, Kevin rented a karaoke room. And so there were a dozen of us in a karaoke room doing Taylor Swift songs for a couple of hours. And it was such a perfect encapsulation to me of what this community means to me and what, like, over the last decade, how this community has really changed my life, not only in like what I've been able to do, but in like the relationships and the friendships I've been able to make, and how much different my life would be if it weren't for this community. So to me, the miracle is not only that I went and that I did it and that I had this cool experience, it's the friends that kind of got me there along the way.
I love that. That's just awesome. Having followed so many of our friends that went to Rio, that went to Stockholm, I think Kevin was in Vienna with that terrible incident that happened there and what he shared near St. Stephen's Church and everything. I would say Taylor united a lot of people, but it's the experiences that people have all come back from. I watched it on Disney Plus, and I'll be honest with you, I had to do it over 3 days because I needed breaks.
It's a whole lot of Taylor. Yeah, I get you.
I don't know how somebody can do 3 hours viewing a show, let alone
I was gonna say, you couldn't watch it. She performed it.
Right. Yeah. No. Total hats off. Total hats off. Like, I don't know. Football players work hard for about 15, 20 seconds, and then they get like 10 or 20 seconds of a break, sometimes a minute or two. She's going hard all 3 hours. And that is absolutely incredible. The thing that just astonishes me, and I didn't understand it at first. I was like, okay, people are going to LA. That might have been Kevin's first one. And then people are like clamoring for tickets here, there, everywhere. And then it was the Rio show. And I think some of your party had been there. And I started to understand. And so when they kept going more and more shows, I'm like, it's just not the right time for us as a family. But I was really starting to understand, and I was really starting to just be like, wow, this is just so cool to follow, so cool to just appreciate that others are getting that experience. So much so to the point where when Capital One had released some more tickets, and they had some sort of advanced availability. And so I got an email from the Capital One Venture. Folks were clamoring for codes, and I was more than happy to throw my card in. I was like, I'm not going to be able to make it myself. Let's get somebody else in that stadium and get that experience. So it's really awesome. I'm astonished that Madrid was one of the cheapest, because Tom will attest, we have not experienced hotels being cheap or anything about that city being terribly cheap. I mean, it's a city that we all love, but it is not the cheapest to stay at.
It wasn't bad. It really wasn't. The Marriott that we stayed to was like in one of those AC properties that was right next to the stadium. Even on the nights of the concert, I want to say it was in the 20s, as far as Marriott points go, maybe 20, 28. And then I splurged a little because I had a free night cert and did the last two nights at the Hilton Atocha, which was just this adorable little property. And I think it was 70,000 Hilton points, I think, and then plus a free night cert. I didn't feel like it was egregious. I didn't feel like it was like Paris level expensive. And I certainly didn't feel like meals and things were that expensive compared to other cities in Europe.
I think it's just hotels, but hotels, it seemed not
expensive. I think the summertime also maybe, I think the seasonality is that, you know, it is uncomfortably warm sometimes in Madrid in the summer. And I don't think that's necessarily the peak season for their hotels. I think we happen to be there, I think, in the fall, which might map more closely to their peak season because the weather's quite a bit more attractive, generally.
Comfortable.
Comfy, yeah.
Okay, Tom.
Hard act to follow, huh? Hard act to, you weren't talking about how miraculous the miracles are.
I mean, but we saved the best for last.
Oh, well, of course you did. I'll set mine up to say, you know, this could have been another grievance, of course, because, you know, Hyatt obviously ended their Las Vegas MGM partnership last year, or I guess technically, or I guess it was probably at the end of last year. And so, you know, one of the grievances obviously was that going away and not having kind of your inexpensive stays at the Dirty Castle or the Pyramid or, you know, some of the other places where people were able to kind of juice their Hyatt stay numbers. And I just love Vegas in general. So just, you know, it kind of hurt a little bit. So my miracle was this amazing thing that happened in that March timeframe, which is suddenly, almost unexpectedly, because we knew this was happening, but the Rio Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas joined the Hyatt program. And you would say, TK, that place is a dump. You know, why is that your miracle? What point of that is? I will say one of the kind of miraculous parts of this is it became a mecca for globalists. And I cannot tell you how many, just as Diaz mentioned, the value of this community, the value of meeting people, having a meal with them, having wonderful discussions, seeing their faces, finding people with the same like-minded love of travel, love of miles and points. I cannot think of something as miraculous as having this one small change with this one property in Las Vegas that has very, very inexpensive Hyatt nights, bringing together the world's community of Hyatt loyalists. And I cannot tell you how many breakfasts at Hash House I have attended with wonderful members of our community, whether they be Chris Moss or Shirley or our friend of the show, Deb, was recently, a countless number of other people, JT Genter and his wife. There's just so many different people that I've had wonderful kind of encounters with. So that's part of the miracle. The other part of the miracle has just been how inexpensive some of these, you know, $20 and $30 stays have been, with all the bonus points and all the different stay credits. And by the way, you know, unheard of, free breakfast for people staying in Vegas. And I cannot tell you, you know, for those of you who have ever had to pay for breakfast at strip prices at an MGM resort or any other pretty much hotel on Las Vegas Boulevard, that is not an insignificant amount of money. You know, I think you can just go into a diner and having breakfast. You know, that's a $30 or $40 per person kind of, believe it or not, meal, which is incredible and insane.
I have two responses here. First, yes. The Hyatt in Las Vegas, Phoenix rises from the ashes.
It does. After being dead, after thinking there's no way for you to earn Hyatt in Vegas, from the ashes rises this beautiful grand Phoenix that becomes the mecca for the community.
And this unintended consequence, you had the Excalibur, you had the Pyramid of Luxor, where you could just book and not actually have to darken their doors. And instead, you have all these globos, as we jokingly called them in previous podcasts, yes, all these globalists, yes, that are congregating at the Rio. And yes, now they're breaking bread with each other. They're making connections.
They really are. Yes.
There's meaningful connections happening.
It is basically our community center, you could just say.
It is. I mean, you know, it used to just be like the Centurion lounges and the other lounges. Now we actually have the Hash House.
We have the Hash House. It is the North American headquarters for the Miles and Points Hyatt fanboys and girls. Mind you, I know some listeners probably like, would Tom just like shut up about the Rio? Because I think he maybe that's the Tom drinking game. You know, everybody swigs some Diet Coke when Tom says Rio. To me, for 2024, that just, it was easy for me to write this one up because it was looking to be a very difficult year to requalify for Hyatt. And instead, what I ended up having is probably about 2 months of stays at the Rio.
I was going to put you on the spot. How many days have you actually stayed at the Rio?
I really should have done a better job of counting my nights. At this point, I've already passed my 60 night threshold. I'm hitting this. I'm starting to go to the new milestones, the past globalist milestones because of it.
And you're still headed back.
And I'm still headed back. I have a stay coming up next week. There's still a little bit left in the 2024 calendar for the Rio. Drink your Diet Coke, everyone.
Okay, now the question I have is, have they started any sort of remodel yet? Or is it still the same sketchy, heroin-laced rooms that I so fondly remember.
It has absolutely been remodeled. The casino floor is very different. The eateries have all been a lot. There are quite a few new, I think actually quite good venues to and get some rooms. Food. And the rooms are, there's an entire tower. I believe the Ipanema Tower has been completely renovated. And they did a nice job of the renovation. It's not luxurious. You're not going to get the Wynn. You're not going to get the Cosmo. It's going to be, you know, more of a nicer Hyatt Place level of furnishing. But to be completely honest, more than acceptable and much improved over how Caesars had run that property into the ground previously. The pool is relatively nice. You know, the casino. There's a lot of great things about it. I think people will often put it down. It's definitely not on the Strip. It is a bit of ways away. You probably don't want to walk there at night or whatever because it's far. That being said, you know, as a base of operations in Vegas, it is not bad at all. There's other casinos around there. There's the Palms. There's, I forget what the name of the other casinos right across the street. There are lots of options for inexpensive eats. There's a Walgreens across the street. There are even some very nice bus routes that you can take. And I believe it or not, I've taken public transportation to get onto the Strip and to different parts of Vegas when I'm not renting a car or if I'm not using Uber. But, you know, between all those options, it's a pretty good base of operations on top of the fact that they're feeding you breakfast, a pretty good breakfast. And quite honestly, that's been one of the more dramatic things, right? The ways that the breakfast benefit has changed over the months. But my most recent visit, the menu that is provided to the globalists is pretty comprehensive and has a lot of good options on it. So I think most people are going to find great value when staying there.
Now, is it only globalists that get the waived resort fees?
I believe that's correct. And, you know, I know that was another one of these kind of dramas out there that there were some rates where, because they were being offered, I guess, by the actual, maybe either the casino side of the property or the non-Hyatt side of the property, that they were not waiving the resort fees, which are, you know, pretty high. There's like $50. But yeah, globalists are the main ones that have no resort fee. I'm sure there's some gamblers where they're offering some clear comp rates, but that's really what it is.
Got it.
Wow. So we've taken quite the trip. We truly have.
A lot to unpack.
Yeah. Dia, you started us out in Europe with your grievances. You showed us the solution to your grievances. And then you took us to Taylor Swift.
In Europe.
That is quite impressive. Tom, you've brought us a no upgrade for elites with Delta. You dashed our hopes with the Priority Pass restaurants, at least those that are still left for those of us that have the VentureX business or the Prestige. But then you brought us back with Virgin, a devaluation that wasn't a devaluation. And you reminded us why Chase Sapphire preferred or no, it's the Reserve or the Marriott or the Ritz-Carlton card are still valuable in highlighting the Sapphire lounges. And then you brought us community, the community of Hash House in Rio, Las Vegas.
I hope it's still around in 2025.
We all do. I mean, I'm sure you're going to ring in the new year at Hash House.
Maybe not on New Year's, but you know. We'll definitely probably be a Hash House visit and a Rio visit in 2025. I'm fairly certain.
I have to say, I am in awe of the two of you and how well linked all of your grievances and strengths and miracles are. I just didn't have that. Instead, my story is a story of not getting back to Turkey, at least not on Turkish, because of a devaluation. It is the best of times and the worst of times for manufactured spending. And I am now free to move about the country, but not on Southwest, rather on Alaska.
I have to say, though, the chaos is probably most evocative of the Festivus spirit.
That's so beautifully said. So beautifully said. I want to close this show out a little bit differently. Of course, Dia, you know, we're so incredibly appreciative for you joining us on this Festivus episode. You know, it's a very special thing to be asked to come on Festivus. On Travel Stories, this is only the second, and Sam was the first, you were the second. When we did this Save Rossi Observation Deck, we were always really intentional about who we invited, just as we are on this, as we are with you. And so you have our sincere thanks for joining us. I love everything you brought, and I love how, like I said, how crisp and linked that narrative, that story is. among the grievances, strengths, and miracles. Tell us where our listeners can find you, if you could.
People can find me at The Dia Adams. I use that across all my socials, and I'm also at thediaadams.com.
So I'm going to put you on the spot, because I happen to remember that you have tried to reinvigorate your website and your personal blogging and content creation. Can you share that with our listeners?
Sure. Basically, I took my Deal Mommy archive, and this was really on a request from my kids. They were thinking about it and realized that a lot of their childhood was documented on the Deal Mommy, but it was buried under about 5,000 posts of, to put it bluntly, crap. A lot of, you know, daily deals. And it was so funny. I went through my old site and there were all these companies that just don't exist anymore. I mean, there was one called Deal Chicken. Really? Deal Chicken? And so I basically took the best 100, 200 hosts from that site and I moved them to my own domain and organized them and put them out on my own name, thediaadams.com. And that's where I'm just sort of sharing my random thoughts and musings about travel and real life.
And I think that's just so awesome. I mean, to give your kids that benefit and then to still have a platform that's relevant to you and relevant to where you are in life now. So happy to give you a little bit of a platform to share that. Hopefully our listeners will give that a shot and take a look at thediaadams.com. Did I hear that right?
Thediaadams.com. Appreciate it.
Awesome. We're going to close this out a little bit differently. This is the Festivus episode after all. So we wish you a very happy Festivus and we welcome you or encourage you to share your Festivus grievances, miracles, and feats of strength. You can share them in the comments if you're listening on the free show. The Myelinomics website has a comment section. We do watch that. We do respond to that. And then if you're part of the Myelinomics community, we encourage you to share your Festivus grievances, miracles, and feats of strength on Slack. And let's see if we can have a really great conversation about all that is bad, great, and incredible about this wonderful community that we have. Happy Festivus, everyone.
Happy Festivus.
Happy Festivus.